What's Right with Nick Wright is a rapidly growing podcast from the Fox Sports Podcast Network. You may know Nick Wright from co-hosting FS1's First Things First. This podcast gives Nick a chance to develop, deep dive, and defend his sharpest opinions. During the show, Nick faces off against a ticking clock, a team of producers, and even his own family to try and get his points across. New episodes drop Monday, Thursday, and Friday, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Goats have home lives too.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Rich Eisen.
Hello, Rich Eisen.
Rich Eisen. Oh, that's Susie Eisen's husband.
The Rich Eisen Show. And now, sitting in for Rich, here's Dan Schwartzman.
It is hour three of the Rich Eisen Show on a Wednesday. Dan Schwartzman in for Rich. Always fun sitting in the big boy chair. Big hour coming up. We'll get to some Major League Baseball in about 20 minutes or so. Bob Nightingale, USA Today Sports Major League Baseball columnist, will join us. But the Tua Tagovailoa situation with the Miami Dolphins head coach Mike McDaniel talking today to the media. In regards to that, we now know that Tua is in the concussion protocol, not expected to play, obviously, against the Patriots this weekend. Some wonder what this means for his career. The second time he will be out with a concussion. And by the way, the second time that he was concussed in the game and he was he was allowed to continue playing. The Dolphins not looking good. You wonder what this means for the NFL as well. Will they have to revamp their concussion protocol? And look, they've tried. They got a spotter, right? A spotter can take a guy out of a game. And I remember, by the way, the last time when the Jets played the Dolphins earlier this year, Sauce Gardner went in when the Dolphins were at like their 1 yard line. Gardner blitzed. And he hit Teddy Bridgewater on like the first play of the game, whatever it was. And the spotter made Bridgewater come out of the game because he thought he was concussed. The Jets got a safety out of it.
Yeah,
they ended up winning that game.
I had a spot pick on Bridgewater that week and got me no points.
Yeah, because he was out after one play. The spotter pulled him out of the game.
Killed me on my fantasy league.
So where was the spotter here? Because on social media, people kept playing that play over again during the game saying, wow, Teddy, you know, because Tua Tagovailoa was playing good football until he took that hit. His head bounced off the turf, and then he threw three interceptions after that. Coincidence? I think not. So people on social media could see it, and yet somehow at the stadium itself, no one saw it? Sounds criminal to me. But Mike McDaniel talked to the media today about Tua Tagovailoa. Take a listen.
He's better than yesterday. Beyond that, I feel like it's kind of weird to extrapolate beyond good, which is what he tells me.
So he did suffer a concussion then?
He did.
Do we know what stage of the protocol he's in right now?
No, I'm not even really worried about any of that. Again, it is like, you lean on, in moments like this, you lean on medical professionals, and I stopped even thinking about anything but each day and when it was clear and obvious that is the best thing for him. So stage, all that stuff, it's just a day at a time.
So there's Mike McDaniel, head coach of Miami Dolphins, talking about Tua. They admit that he, of course, was concussed. No surprise there. You can tell he was very uncomfortable talking about it and taking that question. And probably because he has to really watch what he says, because this is far from over. This will be looked at by the league. Legally, you wonder if Tua and his family will look at this. So I think if you're Mike McDaniel, you are treading lightly. This is a guy that usually, you know, is a good talker. I mean, when he's mic'd up or other press conferences, when the topic isn't concussions and his quarterback, he's usually happy-go-lucky and a much better talker than what you heard there. So clearly he is picking and choosing his words carefully, answering those questions from reporters when it comes to Tua. And I'm going to put it to you simple. Right now he's listed as day-to-day. Most likely out Sunday against the Patriots. It's a crucial game. Dolphins will make the playoffs for the first time in, 5 years if they win out the last two games, or they win one of the next two and some other teams helped them along. But the reality is, I don't understand how Tua is just not listed as out for the remainder of this season. Okay? I mean, to me, that's the obvious play here. If I'm the NFL league office, I'm making a call to the Dolphins, and I am saying flat out, hey, guys, or call Stephen Ross, the owner, and say, Stephen, Tua's done for the year. It's not going to look good for the league if we let him come back in a week. I mean, two concussions in a year? Why is it that in the NHL, when guys get concussed, some of these guys are out for a year, right? I mean, I remember Sidney Crosby got concussed. He was out months, okay? A Boston Bruin player, I don't remember his name, literally was never the same after taking a concussion. I think Mark Stahl, the New York Rangers, was out months after being concussed. How is it that we're going to let Tua Tagovailoa come back in a matter of weeks? In the NFL, somehow these guys come back in weeks, while in other sports, they're out a long time. The New York Yankees had an outfielder a few years back who's no longer with them. He was concussed. And guess what? He wasn't the same for a long time. Literally a long time. It's time for somebody to tell the Dolphins, look, this guy's done for this year. Let's see how he does this offseason. But for 2022, I don't care if you get to the Super Bowl, and we're talking 5 weeks from now, dude's not playing. He's out. Well, if Tua is officially out for this game against the Patriots, Teddy Bridgewater will get the start. Here's Coach Mike McDaniel of the Dolphins on Bridgewater.
At this point, is Teddy Bridgewater the starter for Sunday?
You know, the whole idea of taking day-to-day is kind of rough on coaches who have to plan for, you know, a bunch of people. So the approach that I'm unequivocally taking today, you know, I was on the phone. I met with him yesterday. I met with Teddy yesterday. I was, you know, exchanging ideas and talking through some stuff all the way till like 10:15 last night. Then it was his bedtime. Moving forward today, and you know, the whole team's approach is Teddy Bridgewater is the starter. This is why, you know, we thought it so vital to go after him in free agency. This is why he's done such a diligent job during the course of the season with his own injuries and such to be prepared for this opportunity. And I know the team's very excited, feel very fortunate to have him and him to get his opportunity that he's totally prepared for.
Why is this so tough to answer? Like, Mike McDaniel is really like struggling to answer these questions. You notice that?
It's like, unbelievable. Really, I know. It's
struggling.
Like, spit it out already.
Spit it out. Like, I mean, yeah, Teddy's my starter. Of course he's my starter. Tua ain't hitting the field. This isn't rocket science. Come on. I'm just so stunned by this. Like, what is it, the hard-headed nature of the NFL? No pun intended, by the way, with hard-headed. But what is this hard-headed nature of the NFL where it's like you're a he-man and you can get concussions, but you still should play? Like, what is going on here? Like, this is ridiculous. It's stupid. The guy is hurt. His brain's been taking hits this year. He should not play. This should not be complicated. Why is this so complicated? This is what it should. It's Wednesday already. You're playing this weekend. It's simple. Yeah, Teddy's the starter. Tua's out indefinitely. There, I worded it correctly for Miami. It is this stubbornness of this league and probably the tacit approval of this league that allows for these teams to play in that gray area. And that's exactly what it is, Art. It's a gray area where they want to kind of keep hope alive when, frankly, there should be no hope.
I'll give you the bottom line. It's all about the money. It's all about gambling. It's all about the point spread. About the over-under. It's all about that.
That is true. You're absolutely correct. It is all about the money. And it is all about, you know, Tua plays, better odds.
Yeah, better odds. The odds change with Bridgewater.
Yeah, because the chances of winning are much less with Teddy Bridgewater than they are with Tua Tagovailoa. Simple enough. But that's why the league has to step in. And that's why the league has to say, all right, this is what it is. Look, it's like this. The player themselves will do whatever it takes to get on the field, right? That's just the NFL way. Players themselves will do whatever it takes. No one wants to sit out, okay? Players will lie about their health. They do it in every sport. I remember in baseball, Chase Utley, when I was in Philadelphia covering the Phillies, Chase Utley was hurt, and it was obvious, but they kept playing him because he kept saying he's okay, and then turns out later he wasn't okay, and then years later, he said that he should have just not played. It hurt the team. These guys want to play. They don't want to sit. That's all they know how to do is play the sport they're in. If you talk to an ex-NFL player and you ask him, what did you do the first year out of retirement? You know what they say? Nothing. I didn't know what to do. I've been playing a sport all my life. It's been regimented. I am pretty much told when to eat, when to show up at a facility, when to go home, right?
That's the same with us. It's the same when we retire from radio, what are we going to do?
Exactly.
The same.
What do we do? Exactly. That's why we don't retire. We stay in this. We can't get out.
Exactly.
But it's like the military, too, to a point, right? I mean, Art, people that do 20 years in the military.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, transitioning into civilian life, yeah, it's very, very tough.
Very tough. Like, what do you do? You've been told what to do, right? Lights out at this time. Chow at that time. And then somehow you have to, try to live outside of that. And that's why a lot of people who get out of the military kind of live that, they kind of keep it going, right? Their schedule. They go to bed early, they get up late. They go to bed early, they get up early. Art, how many years after you got out did you still get up early?
Oh, man, it was a couple years at least.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. You go through your routine, you get up, you make your bed, hospital corners.
Yeah, you make it perfectly, you bounce quarters off of it, right?
Absolutely, tight. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. It's because that's all you've been doing for these years. So, like, why would you stop?
You shine your shoes. You shine your boots. Absolutely.
Unbelievable, right? You don't know how to stop because you don't know what else to do because that's all you've been doing. It's honestly that simple. You've been doing it for that long. You're just like, okay, I'll keep doing it because that's what you do. I'm just always dumbfounded by it, but I understand it. And it's the same thing again with, like, the NFL where, guys play in the league, the ones who are lucky enough to play a long time, and then they leave. I had a friend who retired after 13 years in the NFL, didn't have an outlet for, his competitiveness. He actually went to yoga every single day for 365 days. He went to yoga literally every single day because he had nothing else to do and just didn't know what to do. And I was like, well, why don't you, get a job? He's like, well, you know what? Like, what? I caught a football for 13 years. Like, what skill does that help me in the real world, Hey, what did you do? I caught a football for 13 years. Okay, what does that mean? Does that help you in the business world? He had a degree to fall back on, which he did. But still, we think it's cool. Hey, you played in the NFL for a long time. You did this or that. But in the end, when you try to find a job, you say, I caught a football for 13 years. That doesn't exactly make you a hot commodity at times because it doesn't mean you can do anything else in life except catch a football.
Well, that's why these guys go into coaching as well, too.
Right.
Keep it going.
They keep it going. It's all they can do because that's all they've ever done. And that makes perfect sense, by the way. It makes absolutely perfect sense. But with that said, it also makes it difficult because you're trying to figure out what you do in life, and it's a very hard question to answer because of the fact that you've done nothing else in life except play that sport. To a point, it's sad, right? And some guys can't adapt, and you hear the horror stories of athletes falling off, going bankrupt. They don't know how to kind of assimilate back into, normal society from, being in the media, being a celebrity, people wanting your autograph. Sunday, you strap on the pads, you become He-Man, and you leave all that. I think that's one of the reasons why Tom Brady hasn't called it quits yet.
Yeah, cost him his marriage.
Yeah, we think so. We think that's the reason. But yeah, I think the whole point is that for a Tom Brady, this is all he's done for 20 plus years. What else is he going to do at this point?
And he won't quit either.
His father brought that up.
Am I still a better Raider fan?
No, you're not. But his father kind of brought that up recently.
that's his big worry, that like his son just can't quit. And I don't think he can quit, because what does Tom Brady do tomorrow when he wakes up if there's no football? He tried that for like 40-some-odd days, and it didn't work out, right? Like, he didn't seem to enjoy what life was without football, and he unretired within a couple of months. And that's just because he doesn't have anything else to do, and he's afraid of life after football. I believe, I truly believe that's what it is.
He's got a family. It's like, spend it with your family. No, it cost him his marriage.
But you know what, though, Art? Honestly, like, I have two kids, right? And I like spending time with my kids, but I also like spending time alone. You know, sometimes you kind of want to be away with from the kids, because it's not easy, right? It's not easy with a young, a couple of young kids around. You always have to be kind of alert. And I think for Tom Brady, you know, raising kids has been somewhat of a part-time job, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So I think it's always nice to kind of have your freedom as well as still having the family. And football, to me, kind of affords him time with his buddies and time away from the family. And I don't know if he's ever been used to being around the family all the time. And that's a tough transition to go from being somewhat there with the family to always being there with the family. And it's not always a good transition. So, you know, I think maybe he realized, hey, getting up morning tonight, being around the family isn't, it's great. I love my kids and stuff, and I love my wife, but this is hard. It's not what I want to do. I kind of want to keep playing football because it gives me purpose in life more so than raising the family. That's just my theory on the whole situation. Not a good one, but that's what it is. Find the latest and greatest audio entertainment on Audible. It's got everything you want to hear, including The Rich Eisen Show. Along with podcasts, you'll also find audiobooks and exclusive originals. We're talking comedy, sports stories, deep dives with athletes and entertainers, business, and anything else you're into. With Audible, you get access to thousands of included titles with more added every week. Listen on the road, at the gym, or anywhere you want to fuel up your imagination. Join and get 30 days free at the home of storytelling, Audible.com. Major League Baseball offseason rolls along. The Boston Red Sox with another bargain signing. Corey Kluber this time heading to Fenway Park. Why are they acting like a small market team? And the Dodgers as well. Big spenders? Not so much this year. USA Today Sports Major League Baseball columnist Bob Nightingale will be joining us next. Dan Schwartzman in for Rich on Wednesday right here on the Rich Eisen Show.
What's Right with Nick Wright is a rapidly growing podcast from the Fox Sports Podcast Network. You may know Nick Wright from co-hosting FS1's First Things First. This podcast gives Nick a chance to develop, deep dive, and defend his sharpest opinions. During the show, Nick faces off against a ticking clock, a team of producers, and even his own family to try and get his points across. New episodes drop Monday, Thursday, and Friday, wherever you get your podcasts. Did you know that driving high is considered driving under the influence? That's right. Driving under the influence of marijuana is against the law in every state, even in states where marijuana is legal. That means driving high could get you a DUI. And if you think law enforcement officers can't tell when you're driving high, you're wrong. Your friends can tell. Your coworkers can tell. Even your parents can tell. Everyone can tell. So, what makes you think that law enforcement officers don't know when you're driving high? Driving under the influence of marijuana can slow your response time and change how you perceive time and speed. So, even if you think you're fine to drive when you're high, you're not. Because the bottom line is, if you feel different, you drive different. And driving high is driving under the influence. So, remember, drive high, get a DUI. Paid for by NHTSA.
Wednesday edition of the Rich Eisen Show. Dan Schwartzman in for Rich, leading up to New Year's coming up this weekend. Amazing how quickly 2023 is upon us. Major League Baseball free agency, some good names still available. Others signing. Corey Kluber now a member of the Boston Red Sox. Carlos Correa still kind of twirling in the wind there. Hasn't officially signed with the Mets either due to the physicals. What's the latest there? Buddy Bob Nightingale, USA Today Sports Major League Baseball columnist, joining us. Bob, happy holidays and happy new year to you and your family, first of all.
Yeah, you too. Thank you, man.
Thank you, Bob. Appreciate it. Look, Carlos Correa apparently fails the physical at the San Francisco Giants. I don't know if he's officially failed the physical at the Mets, but there's concerns coming out of his physical at the Mets to where he hasn't signed that 12-year deal for $315 million. What is the latest, and why are teams still pursuing a guy that seemingly can't pass physicals for two teams?
Well, now you're seeing if you can get him at a discount price. I mean, the Twins offered 10 years at about $280, $285, and they said, oh, you back in, you got to raise your price. They said no, and we're not even sure that we will do a deal because of the physicals. I mean, even though they had him playing, obviously both the Giants and Mets saw something that alarmed them, or else it would have been a deal with the Giants in the first place.
You know, Bob, but that said, though, look, I mean, Carlos Correa is a pretty good player. There's no question about it. And from what we understand, and this is not information that's coming directly from the team, so I'm not sure, but this is based on an injury he had about 8 years ago while playing in the minor leagues that has not affected him all these years. Is this considered something that potentially long-term, like an arthritic type of condition where, you give a guy a 10-year contract, 12-year contract, this will flare up at some point? I guess that has to be the worry, correct?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like there's a plate in that right ankle. He was quoted late in the season. Someone slid into him. He goes, oh, that kind of stung for a while. It hit the plate. And, I was a little worried, to kind of freeze up. So, yeah, obviously there's some concern there. Obviously a lot of concern. The thing if you're Correa, though, is like, just had two deals. I lost $35 million from the first one. What happens here? My gut guess is because the Mets want him so bad, and they've already publicly said, at least the owner has said, hey, we'll get a deal, because usually it's just the agents that leak that out, never the teams because the physical. But my guess is they'll just restructure it. Like, okay, if you miss a significant amount of time because of the lower right leg injury, then we're going to shave some years off that contract.
Yeah, kind of the J.D. Martinez situation at the Boston Red Sox, I guess, when they brought him in, kind of give themselves some out clauses in it due to health reasons. They never had to use it, obviously, but that was a much shorter contract than what Carlos Correa is going to get. Now, that said, though, look, I love baseball, Bob, and, Manny Machado, to me, is a tremendous player. I think when you look at where the shortstops went this offseason, Swanson goes to Chicago, the Phillies, of course, get in there as well with Trey Turner, who I think is phenomenal. Correa's had, some health issues. Offensively, you look at the numbers, he's pretty good. I'm not sure he's great. Is he a guy that maybe is being overrated to a point? Am I wrong to think that? Because I don't think he's as good as Machado. I don't think he's good as Trey Turner.
No, I'm with you on that. He's a very good player. He was obviously a great teammate in Minnesota, certainly with the Houston Astros. Remember, the Astros originally offered 5 years at about $150 million, and he turned it down before he departed. So, I think you're paying for the whole thing. Just his charisma, a sharp guy. He reminds you of Alex Rodriguez in the sense. I'm not saying he's got Rodriguez's talent.
Right.
But just that kind of charisma, the reporters flock to him, before and after games, that sort of thing.
All right, so it's not just me saying that. I'm glad that you agree, Bob, because I'm always like, he's good. I just don't think he's in that upper echelon that he's seemingly getting paid for. Now, the New York Mets, we brought them up, and obviously if they lock up Correa for whatever amount of money with the luxury taxes involved, their payroll as a whole will be approaching $500-plus million, which could be, in fact, $200 million more than the Yankees and literally doubled the third-place team, which I believe is the Phillies. Good for baseball, bad for baseball, Bob?
Well, I think, it's great for the Mets. I think it's bad for baseball in the sense that, you and I, Dan, can right now, 12 playoff teams, we can, I'm sure, pick at least 10 or 11 of the teams that will be in the playoffs. We know who's going to be in just because of the payroll. And when you have the largest disparity among all the sports, something's wrong. People say, well, the other owners should spend more. Yeah, maybe they should, but they're not doing that. So I just think it's it can lead to some bad results. When you have a team that's going to have $500 million in payroll and taxes, play against a team that's got a $60 million payroll.
But here's the problem, though, Bob. The San Diego Padres are playing in the 27th largest media market in America, and they have a payroll that's about $250 million. Should we be more mad at the New York Mets for spending money? I know they're in obviously a bigger market and they have SNY and they get revenue from that. Or should we be more mad at teams like the Marlins or the Rays or the Pirates or the Royals? Teams that just don't seem to want to spend money. Instead, they just want to pocket all these profits. And we're talking probably significant profits. Shouldn't we be more mad at the teams, Bob, that don't want to spend any money when clearly they can spend more than they're actually spending?
Yeah, I mean, you make more, you know, once you sell that team, that's when you really do it. I mean, everybody in baseball, you know, is talking about the San Diego Padres. You're absolutely right. I mean, 27th largest market is not going to grow any. You know, you got L.A. to the north, Mexico to the south, Pacific Ocean, you know, west, and then the desert to the east. I mean, they're trapped in there. But they have an owner, Peter Seidler, who doesn't care about losing money. And a lot of these teams say, wait a minute now, I got this, it's a fun thing, but to make money, it's a good business. But Peter Seidler is the one saying, you know what, I don't care. I want to leave a World Series championship as part of my legacy. So they're really more of an outlier than anybody.
USA Today Sports Major League Baseball columnist Bob Nightingale joining us here on the Rich Eisen Show. Dan Schwartzman in for Rich on this Wednesday. What are the Red Sox doing? That's a big market. You know, they have Nesson. I mean, they can spend money, yet they seem to be, you know, shopping the bargain basement aisle this offseason and letting Xander Bogaerts walk, the second homegrown superstar they let walk in recent memory, along with Mookie Betts. What's going on there?
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like, you know, when you said, you know, people in Kansas City, Cleveland, all these places should be upset. But no, nobody should be upset more in Boston because that's a major market team. They have tons of resources there with their TV network and the price of the tickets, you know, sellouts a lot of times. I think what's happened with them is that they get tired of seeing Tampa win year after year, be competitive, saying, why can't we be like Tampa? We just hired the RGM who's from Tampa. Let's see if we can do it by bargain basement shopping and playing within. So, I mean, I don't see Rafael Devers staying there. I mean, if they're not going to pay for Mookie Betts and Bogaerts, what are they going to do it for him for?
No, that's a great point. Absolutely, you're right. Is he going to stick around? Probably not. There's another homegrown guy that will most likely be playing elsewhere. And the Dodgers also this offseason, they've been kind of, you know, they haven't made the big splash that you kind of come to expect from them. Is that a case where they're tired of paying the luxury tax and trying to reset that number?
Yeah, I mean, I think of all the 30 teams, I think that's the most fascinating or intriguing one to watch, just because they're doing the old school things. You know what? We're gonna win with homegrown guys. Now they can, you know, whenever they want, they can trade some of those guys. Certainly, they have, you know, more financial resources than, you know, probably any team in baseball with that TV contract and the attendance and all. But I think they're saying, you know what? Let's see if we can win this way. I think it'd be fascinating if they can pull it off and if they get to a World Series and win the World Series. You know, I think it'd be one of the best baseball stories in quite a while. I mean, you got star players, but to watch everybody spend more money than you and just kind of sit back is fascinating. You know, granted, they do it against they do want to get an luxury tax number, just like the Yankees did a couple of years ago. And they're saying, you know, hey, we're going to save that money for Shohei Ohtani. But how confident can you be to get Ohtani when you got the Padres willing to do the same thing and the Mets willing to do the same thing?
I'm glad you brought up Ohtani because Aaron Judge gets $40 million a year, and he's a tremendous hitter and just set a American League record with 62 home runs, deserving of the 9 years, $360 million. Now, Ohtani may not be quite the hitter, but he's not far behind, and he is a top 10 pitcher in baseball as well. And he's incredibly marketable, not just here, but also in Asia. So if Judge is worth $40 million a year, Bob, next year when Shohei Ohtani probably does hit free agency, what are we talking here? Like, I mean, what kind of numbers?
It's got to be something similar to Judge. I mean, obviously, age is, you know, catch up a little bit of Ohtani. He's a, you know, how long can he keep doing this as far as pitching and hitting? But that being said, I think the Angels make $20 million a year off him with merchandising and licensing and everything else, not to mention, you know, the ticket sales every time he pitches. So, yeah, maybe he gets like a shorter-term deal, like a five-year deal, but maybe that pays him, you know, $50 million a year, $60 million a year, something like that. I just don't, you know, people don't know how long he can stay healthy doing both things. But if he just do one of them, I mean, that's worth probably $30 million just by itself.
What's interesting to me is, though, when people say they're not sure how long he can keep doing it, but the thing is, if he was strictly a pitcher hitting free agency, what are we talking, $35 million a year, right? I mean, if he's just a hitter strictly hitting free agency, we're probably talking, what, $35 million a year, right? So if he can't pitch anymore and he just has to DH, we know he can hit 40 home runs and drive in 100 runs. If it's not going to be the hitting and he's a pitcher, maybe he becomes a relief pitcher. He's got great stuff to probably do that as well. The reality is, because he can do so much, Bob, isn't he actually a decent investment because of the fact that he can adapt because he does everything?
Oh, he does. I mean, Mookie Betts is getting $365 million over 12 years, just, you know, strictly as an outfielder. Certainly Ohtani should get the same thing, too. I mean, once Ohtani gives up pitching, and, you know, if that day does happen, you know, he's a tremendous outfielder, great arm, great speed, a fabulous, obviously, athlete. So, I mean, he could be like center field right now very easily for the Angels if they weren't worrying about the pitching and give him some rest that way. So, yeah, I mean, I would think he gets at least, you know, $350 million, you know, no matter what, because he'd be that good of a pitcher, you know, at least a, $35 to $40 million range. And, same thing as a position player, over 30 a year for sure.
I'm not going to date you here because you're a young guy, Bob, but you've been around this game, you know, long enough and followed this game. Is he the best baseball player you've ever seen in your lifetime?
No, I mean, most intriguing for sure, doing it both ways. I mean, you say what you want about the PD era, but, you know, Barry Bonds is the best player I've ever seen. I don't think I'll see anything like that again. I was covering a lot of Barry Bonds games that year. He hit 73. If he had pitches to hit, he would have hit 95 to 100 home runs. I mean, I've never seen a guy just dominate like he did. You know, I saw, you know, a lot of Aaron Judge down the stretch. But Judge, you know, he would get some pitches to hit. You know, Bonds would get maybe one pitch a game, and every time he got it, it was a home run. So, no, he's the best I've ever seen.
You know, that's a great
point. Jackson coming up. That was fun, too. But obviously, Ohtani's a different league.
No, that's a great point. You're right. Bonds walked, what, 242 times that year, I think it was, and 100 times or something intentionally. What if he was able to hit some of these pitches? How many more home runs would he hit? Now, you know, he played for the San Francisco Giants. They had a lot of money to spend this offseason, and frankly, no one seemed to want to take their money. Judge didn't. Carlos Rodon didn't as well. Why didn't people want to go to San Fran?
Well, I think Rodon would have if the money was close to being the same. I think with the sluggers, they just don't want to go to that ballpark. And, we saw that when, you know, Giancarlo Stanton had – that was a trade that was done, but he turned it down. You know, Bryce Harper would have got about the same amount of money from San Francisco. He turned it down. I just think people think, you know what, let me go out east. There's so much more star power. You know, at the end, the Giants said – I'm sorry, the Yankees told Judge, hey, do you want to be a Yankee for life, that this marquee attraction to be the captain? Well, do you want to go to San Francisco and be forgotten about? And their case in point was Buster Posey. You know, Posey, you know, great catcher, won 3 World Series titles. But imagine how big of a star he would have been if he was doing the same thing for the Yankees.
Is that still a thing? You know, I'm out in New York, and people always say, well, the Knicks, they play in the world's most famous arena, and, you know, to do it in New York is something else, yet, you know, they haven't gotten that star player to want to come play in New York. Kobe didn't, LeBron didn't, there were opportunities to get these guys, none of them wanted to. Is being a Yankee still have some sort of an aura to it with these younger players today, Bob?
Yeah, it's still there. I mean, still, you know, probably the most iconic, you know, franchise in team sports. You know, you look at what happened at the end of the season with those home run balls. Albert Pujols' ball, when he hit the 700th home run, they said that was going to be worth about $95,000 to $100,000. And Aaron Judge's ball was going to be about $3 million. You know, the guy didn't get $3 million, but he had a $3 million offer. But, you know, to me, I would rather have the 700 home run ball by Pujols. But I asked some collectors, I said, why the huge difference? They said just because of being a Yankee and being that market. I think
really?
If somebody else had hit, you know, if Judge was playing for, you know, I don't care, Cubs or whoever, and, you know, broke the record, or I was an American League team, got 62 home runs, it wouldn't have been nearly the same as a Yankee breaking a Yankee record.
Yeah, the guy still got $1.5 million. I mean, I don't know how you leave, you know, $3 million on the table, but he still got $1.5 million for that Judge home run ball. Last thing, Bob, the Texas Rangers have thrown around a ton of money last offseason, what, $500 million, this offseason, hundreds upon hundreds of millions as well. Are they that much better? I mean, you know, DeGrom hasn't stayed healthy the last couple of years. When healthy, he may be the best pitcher in baseball. They gave him a contract that many look at and say, man, for a guy with the injury concerns, that's a lot of years and a lot of money. Did they spend wisely, in your mind, the last couple of years with all those hundreds of millions?
Yeah, remains to be seen. I mean, I'm with you on DeGrom. I mean, you know, I'm stunned he got that kind of money for not being healthy. You know, when Marcus Semien and Seager went there, you know, they didn't make much of a difference at all. It was still a lousy baseball team. They're in a tough division. I mean, right now you're looking, okay, Houston's still the team to beat in the division. Seattle's still the second-best team. You know, okay, it's a huge payroll where you're going to finish third at tops. You know, maybe it surprised people. It's nice to have the owner, you know, spend that kind of money, you know, brand new, beautiful ballpark. But yeah, I think we get carried away thinking they're going to challenge for the division title. And I think Houston's still the team to beat.
It's incredible. You're right. I mean, hundreds of millions of dollars last year, $500 million for that middle infield, and literally made no difference in terms of the standings. Bob Nightingale, USA Today Sports Major League Baseball columnist. Bob, happy New Year's. Appreciate the time as always.
You too. My pleasure. Thank you, Dan.
Awesome stuff there from Bob. Yeah, great points by Bob. You know, the Correa situation is just bizarro, right? Giants schedule a press conference the day of. They cancel it because of this concern with his physical. 5-6 hours later, Scott Boras, best agent in all of sports, works out a deal with the Mets. Does have to take $35 million less, but okay, still a $315 million deal. That hasn't been consummated because of the physical. Yet the Mets are still trying to sign him, probably put in some escape clauses for them. Other teams have kind of still shown some interest in him. I would run away. Like, I just understand why you would want to go get a guy that has such legitimate injury concerns that, you know, he can't pass two physicals. That's got to be more than concerning, right? Like, why would you even, you know, these are guaranteed contracts. I just don't understand why you would do it. Like, why would you put yourself in that position? It makes no sense to me. I don't even think he's that great of a player. And then Carlos Correa is a very good player. I don't think he's an elite player. And by the way, he hasn't been an elite player in a long time. I mean, come on. Machado is a much better player than him. Trey Turner is a better player than him. You know, Carlos Correa, the last couple of years, okay, you know, Minnesota this year, he had 291, 22 homers, 64 RBIs. Okay, 834 OPS. Not bad. That's good. Year before, 279, 26 homers, 92 RBIs. Okay. That's okay. It's pretty good. Guy hasn't hit over 291 since 2017. He's never hit more than 26 home runs in an entire season. He's never driven in 100 runs in a year. He's never led the league in any category except sacrifice flies back in 2018.
That counts.
That counts. So excuse me for kind of missing the boat on Carlos Correa's greatness here. He's never had a season with 40 doubles. He's never had a season with more than 158 hits. He's had one season in his career with over 100 runs scored. Injuries have been a concern for Carlos Correa over the years, right? I'm baffled. I'm honestly baffled. He doesn't steal bases. Here's an incredible statistic, Art. Carlos Correa hasn't stolen a base since 2019. No joke.
That'll get him paid.
Apparently it's worth $300 million. So somebody wants to overpay, go right ahead. But he is not that great. Josh McDaniels, Raiders head coach, had a lot to say today at his press conference. What did he say? You'll have to wait and hear it next. Dan Schwartzman in for Rich Eisen. It is a Wednesday edition of the Rich Eisen Show. Up on a Wednesday, this is the Rich Eisen Show. Dan Schwartzman in for Rich. New Year's coming up this weekend, amazingly. College football playoffs Semifinal matchups, TCU, Michigan, Georgia, Ohio State on Saturday. NFL week 17, of the season. A lot of playoff implications, and also an interesting, you know, we know Tua Tagovailoa most likely not playing for the Dolphins with concussions. Teddy Bridgewater most likely the starter. They haven't officially said that yet out of Miami. We played some Mike McDaniel for you earlier. Speaking of McDaniel, how about Josh McDaniels with the Raiders in Vegas? Wondering about Derek Carr. Is he going to play or not? So here's the thing. If Derek Carr gets hurt the rest of this season, it guarantees money for next year. So that guarantees money. And the Raiders don't want to do that. A lot of people believe that the Raiders are going to move on from Derek Carr at the end of this year. And maybe that is the case. So that brings this up. Okay, what do they do? Are they officially going to bench him? Well, Josh McDaniels talked about that today in his press conference. Here's the Raiders head coach.
A couple things to update everybody on. We put Denzel and Chandler on IR, so they will they'll be out the remaining couple weeks this season. And had a good conversation with the quarterbacks this morning, and so we're going to go ahead and start Jarrett the last couple games of the season here. You know, none of us is happy with where we're at, but we think it's an opportunity to, you know, evaluate a younger player who hasn't had much time to play. You know, talking to Derek, who was great. You know, he understands the scenario that we're in and the situation, and very supportive of the two young guys. Those three guys obviously have worked together hand in hand all year, and you know, he'll do anything he can to help them. So, you know, that's what we're going to do. And obviously we're, you know, started into our preparation for what I think probably is the best, you know, football team top to bottom that we've played in San Francisco. So, well coached, you know, extremely highly ranked in every category, offense, defense, special teams. I'd say probably playing as good as any team that we faced all year at the time that we're playing them, and excited for the opportunity and looking forward to the challenge of this.
So there you have it. Derek Carr will not play, and he will not play obviously the rest of this year for the Las Vegas Raiders, and he probably will never play again for the Raiders. I think it's fairly obvious that they don't want to put him in a position to get hurt, which would then guarantee the remaining years on that contract, and they don't want to get themselves stuck with that because of the fact he doesn't fit into their plans. There will be a market for Derek Carr, no question about that. There will be a market for Carr. You know, he would have to possibly have to change or restructure his contract. That makes sense. You look at Derek Carr, and I gotta be honest with you, like, he's 31 years old now. He's been in this league Nine years. He's had a nice 9-year run. You know, he's not a terrible quarterback. You know, Derek Carr averages, you know, 4,000 yards passing a season. He averages, you know, 25 touchdown passes or so a season. You know, I don't think he always makes the best decisions per se. But Derek Carr is not a terrible quarterback. And you put him on a roster like the Jets, who have talent at the skill level positions, and I think overall just have a more talented roster than the Raiders, I think he'd probably play pretty well there.
Everything, you know, pretty much turned around in 2016 when they made the playoffs. They were 12-4 that year.
Yeah.
They lost in the wild card playoffs, but he had gotten hurt a couple weeks earlier, the last week of the season. He had broke his leg. But, I mean, he had an MVP season that year and never was the same.
Never was the same. I mean, you know, he's still been a very good quarterback in this league. I'm not going to begrudge, you know, Derek Carr. I think Derek Carr is going to, you know, win some games still. He's still got years left in this league, and he's going to win some games. And there are going to be teams that, what's he making, 20 mil a year or something like that?
I think it's more. I'll look it up.
Is it more than that? I mean, whatever he's making, you know, look, if a team's going to go out there and get themselves Derek Carr, either they want to pay him out the last couple years on that contract because they think it's a good deal, they can fit him
40.5.
But that's over 2 years, right?
Annual. It's just an annual salary.
So he's scheduled to make $40 million per year?
Signed a three-year contract worth $121.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah, he's going to have to restructure that contract if he wants to go somewhere else. There's no question he's going to have to restructure that contract. He's not going to be able to go anywhere for $40 million. Like, teams will want him to restructure that deal. And he probably would. I don't see why. Like, he's still going to make a lot of money. What he can do is he can add years to that deal, you know? Derek Carr can, you know, he's got 2 years left on that deal. He may have to give up, you know, $10 million a year, whatever it is, but he'll get himself a longer-term deal. Somebody's going to want to bring him in.
I saw a story that after the Super Bowl, the Raiders have a $5 million out.
So they just have to pay him $5 million and he's gone.
Yeah.
And there's no question they're going to take that deal. I mean, they're going to – look, he's never playing again. To bench a guy like that means he's not playing again for you. Right? When they say we want to see what we have with the youth, what they're saying is we clearly want to go in a different direction. Totally understandable, by the way. I mean, if I'm the Raiders, I'm doing the same thing. I think you don't roll with Derek Carr moving forward, right? I mean, it's over for Derek Carr at the Raiders. He's been a good Raider. He has had a nice run with them. I think people like him there. But the fact is, you know, it's a business. And when you're making $40 million a year and you're not winning enough games, it's time for the team to go in a different direction. But here's the problem you're going to have. Derek Carr is a good quarterback. He's not great. Do you know how hard it is to find a good quarterback even in the NFL right now? That's why Jimmy Garoppolo is going to make some money as well this offseason. Because being a good quarterback is good.
Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, good luck with that. Enjoy that. Enjoy a guy whose injury concerns will be highlighted even more. I want to thank Mike Pritchard, lead NFL analyst at VSiN, joining us in Hour 1. David Ubin, National College Football writer for The Athletic in Hour 2. And moments ago, Bob Nightingale, USA Today Sports, Major League Baseball comms. Again, Happy New Year to everybody. That is, of course, coming up this weekend. Enjoy the unbelievable amounts of sports coming up as well. I'm Dan Schwartzman. Always fun filling in for Rich. You're tuned in to The Rich Eisen Show.
How wrestling really works and how you get the ratings. Eric Bischoff and Conrad Thompson explain on 83 Weeks.
You're either growing or you're dying. I think it would be hard to recreate the kind of growth that WCW experienced between 95 and 98. This audience should be growing. The characters should be coming more, and they're not. Everybody's gradually losing audience. Now, people will say, well, but AEW is 15% ahead of where they were last year. But there's variables there. Let's see where we're at a year from now.
83 Weeks on YouTube or wherever you listen.